Welcome to the Power Your Life radio show with host and success doc, Joanne White. Author, speaker, certified coach, and energy master, Doc White gets to the heart of what matters most. She features guests and experts to help you consciously create more success, health, and wellness in every area of your life, work, and relationships. They'll share their success stories, wisdom, and know-how to help you shine more light onto your day and into your life. Power your life right now. Here's Joanne White.
So thanks everyone for tuning in. I'm Joanne White, and wherever you are on the planet, I think it's important to recognize that we all need to have a sense of acceptance and feeling worthwhile and feeling that whatever it is we're doing in our lives, in the world, and somehow making a difference. And my next guest, I'm very excited to introduce, is someone that was on my Power Your Life TV show. She is an actress, a model, and an activist, Sarah Krennic, who is doing so much to help people change perception, change ideas, and make a difference. And she's making a difference in so many people's lives. She's going to talk candidly today about her life, the impact of her films, and the acceptance and the changing tide toward gay women in both life and film. She has acted in Orange is the New Black, Saturday Night Live, and Freud's Magic Powder, and she's also appeared in Nurse Jackie, Law and Order, and I Now Pronounce You Chuck and Larry. Sarah Krennic will also be in two new films, which we're going to talk about, and released, hopefully, I believe, this summer, Freeheld with Julianne Moore and Ellen Page, and Sisters, and you're going to have to help me pronounce it in a minute, with Amy Poehler and Tina Fey. As a child, Sarah was often teased and mistaken for a boy. Through her love of acting, she's inspired people to love themselves and has developed a voice for those who have had a hard time fitting in. How are you, Sarah?
Good afternoon, Dr. Joanne. Thank you for having me today.
It's my pleasure. Did I pronounce her name right, Amy?
Yes, correct.
You're referring
to our sister's film with Tina Fey and
yes,
Fuller?
Yes.
correct.
Okay.
Yes.
So actually, while we're talking about the film, are these films out yet? I know that you were talking about possibly the summer or the fall.
Yes, I do believe that Freeheld should be out in a couple of months, but Sisters actually will be released in September. I believe Christmas. It's funny that you just asked that question. A friend of mine on Facebook posted a still photo because apparently we made the trailer. And, seeing that film, because aside from Nurse Jackie and Orange is the New Black, this was probably one of the best sets that I had ever worked on, only because when the actors came together and the crew came together, everybody just started working as though they had known each other for years. There was this automatic chemistry. We really didn't have to do proper introductions. We just got to set, we started working, and that's the best day that any actor can have.
And that doesn't always happen. Usually what you have to do is kind of form relationships, and that can take time, and that sometimes can interfere with the flow of the show. So when you have that opportunity, send me that image, and I will post it everywhere if you can. Let's talk
a little bit about you.
Good, because I love to promote you. Let's talk a little bit about your role in these two upcoming movies.
Usually when I get cast in film or in TV shows, many people have asked me already if it bothers me, and I don't realize. I mean, if anything, I feel right at home, or I'm in my own skin. When I'm categorized as a more intimidating or, like the head honcho of a scene, whenever they're looking for that, immediately I'm the first person that comes to mind. And for that, I am eternally grateful, because even though I'm being cast type, but, that is me, minus the intimidating part, but I just think that they have a thing with the height, and they think have a thing with presence. And I feel privileged whenever they ask me, because of the fact that usually films like this, It's a periodic piece, or it's based on a true story. It's based on some women's struggles, or, you know, so being a part of that really brings that moment to life, and it's a privilege. It really is.
So when they first started to cast you in roles like that, was that something that you had to kind of fit into or get comfortable with or kind of come to terms with in your own mind?
Oh, no. I was very relieved. I said, finally, thank God they're not criticizing. These roles, basically, they never criticize my clothing. They never criticize my look. Quite the contrary, it's something that's welcomed. If anything, it came as a huge surprise because all my life, you know, I was told, you know, only boys wear pants, or you're not allowed, you shouldn't wear this. Why don't you wear makeup? Why don't, you know, and many times like this, I really do wish that I would have gotten into the whole makeup thing, because if anything, it just looks tons of fun. You know, I mean, if anything, it would be a lovely hobby, you know, but I really envy women that put makeup on a daily basis. And, you know, I don't criticize, because by all means, everybody has their thing. But the only message that I would like to send out to women is, you know, put makeup on because, you know, maybe you just like this tone, or maybe you like this color, but don't put it on because you think that without it you don't look attractive. Quite the contrary,
right, so make,
I think that a woman
make,
is,
right. Make sure that
you
you're
know,
doing it.
A positive message. Yes, exactly.
Right.
Exactly.
Make sure you're doing it firstly for you and not for anybody else, and secondly because you feel that it's enhancing you, but not because you feel that in some way you're less than without it. I'm going to give you a compliment. My sister saw the TV show when you were on. And she said,
oh.
"Who is?" She said, "She is beautiful. Who is she?" That, you know, and then we talked a little bit. So without makeup, you're stunning, according to my sister. Well, I agree, but my sister does.
She's a darling too. But I honestly, it's not the reason. I genuinely don't use makeup, not for any other reason, and I just don't. It's never been. Let's put it this way. My mom, when she was expecting me, she couldn't stand the smell of it. And I always make a joke with her and I say, well, mom, that was me telling you, get it away from me. I mean, my mom was never one that would douse herself in that, but maybe just on a special occasion, maybe a little bit of lipstick or something. And she couldn't tolerate that when she was expecting me. So I said, see, from day one, I was telling you, I don't want that, you know? And I just, like I said, everybody, some women are into very high heels. Some women are into very loud jewelry, big earrings and stuff like that. And there are other women that just don't use anything. I'm not saying that any of these things are bad. And as you had pointed out, Dr. Joanne, if somebody wants to use it for them because they like it, that's fine. But don't put this stuff on because you think that you're not beautiful without it. The most beautiful thing, I think, you know, is to see a woman looking very sleepy and just awake in the morning without anything on. It's the sweetest thing. You know, I don't want to wake up to Revlon, you know? But
now, talking about this also goes back to what you do and what you do not only in your films, Sarah, but also just in your life, and that is to really kind of help people see the beauty within themselves, to feel self-empowered without, you know, without anything extra, to just really kind of look within and identify with that sense of pride. How do you go about doing that, not only in your movies, but in you know, in your daily life?
Well, I do have to say, I have seen many people go throughout their entire lives thinking that just because of the fact that they're not famous, and let's just say that they have a 9-to-5 job, that has thousands of people doing the same thing that they do, they are insignificant. Or just because of the fact that they haven't achieved certain things at a certain age, they're not important. And I have always been inspired by Mother Teresa. She, basically her missionary work, the way that she had such compassion and empathy for the poor, how she would travel worldwide to make a difference. She'd always say, if you think that you don't make a difference in this world, a single drop of water, if it were not in the ocean, would make the ocean incomplete. You know, we all have our part in this world. We all have, we all leave our mark. We all have a voice. And without bumping into somebody, or without, say, picking up your mail, or without buying your coffee, your day would not be complete. So everybody matters. And also Robin Williams, once said that the reason why the people that try to help others the most are the ones that are most depressed inside, because they know what it feels like to feel worthless, and they don't want anybody else feeling like that. So I think this is why I try to send a message like that.
And I think it's an important message. And you know that I totally agree with that. I think that everyone, no matter how insignificant they think what they're doing is or whatever, is very significant, and we all make up the whole. So with that in mind, and early on in, I guess, even before your career, you were bullied a lot because of, I guess, because of your looks or because of people trying to make a determination as to where you're supposed to fit in or whatever. What was that like? And now you sort of have been able to kind of be the spokesperson for people that have had problems fitting in. So what was that like just early on when you were growing up?
Well, I, you know, nowadays I envy how, and even years ago, I remember that I would drown my sorrows. One of my favorite soaps would be Beverly Hills 90210. And the reason when I was much younger, you know, because I was in junior high school when that show was a hit. And I was obsessed with it. I was watching it every single episode, because back then it wasn't like we have Netflix now where we can watch all 14 episodes at once. No, you had to wait a whole week before the next episode came out. So, you know, for me, it was nail biting. I would be so excited watching the show. And nowadays I understand it's because I kind of wanted to escape in that world and try to see what would it be like if I was them, if I was popular, if I had friends, if I could actually do homework with a friend, if I could study with. I didn't have any of that when I was all throughout my years. No, because you know, I was young not so long ago. I mean, obviously it wasn't 5 or 10 years ago, but you know, it's still an era where dinosaurs were no longer roaming the earth, and you would think that, you know, that era would be more accepting, but no, quite the contrary. You know, there was just no such thing as being a girl that was confused for a boy. And it's not that I was trying to do it on purpose. This is what people misunderstand. They say, oh, well, you know, you were just purposely trying to look like. I wasn't. That's just the way that I looked, you know. And obviously, you know, I already knew from a very early age that I was gay, but these feelings were never expressed, these feelings were never acted upon until I was an adult. I never dated in high school or junior high school because I didn't have any friends, and to be perfectly honest, if there was anybody else that was gay in school, they were very quiet about it, and these were girls that looked very feminine, so they could hide it very well. In society, you know, a gay woman nowadays, it's completely different. Nowadays, you can have a super femme woman who identifies as gay, and it's fine. Back then, you know, they automatically, for example, they would say a gay woman, gym teacher, you know, or a gay woman, a police officer, anything
right.
That's rough, you know.
Now, I remember when I was growing up, too. I mean, everything was hush-hush, and I remember when I was a counselor in training at a day camp, and I had a very close friend, and she and I went away for a weekend together, and she was gay, and she had never expressed it. She didn't look, you know, whatever that's supposed to look like or whatever. But the point was, she was very initially very worried about what I was going to think or how I was going to respond or whatever, because we never had that dialogue. We never talked about it. She never talked about it. And so I think looking back, I'm glad that people, and I'm not saying that we're there yet, because I don't think that we're there yet in a lot of ways, but I'm glad that women can be walking across the street. I remember, I mean, I have a lot of gay friends, and I remember years ago, one of my friends was very uncomfortable holding her girlfriend's hand. She was afraid for any sort of ramification that was going to take place in public, and or whether it was jeers, whether it was sneer, whether it was something more violent. And I'm not saying that we're totally out of that, but I think that there is more acceptance. Do you agree?
Oh, much more acceptance. And I can relate to this from my school years because, you know, back then, I mean, there was an advantage in many ways to kind of avoid the heartache and the heartbreak of dating, you know, during those years, because my nose was always in a book and I was leader of the class pretty much, not in my fellow classmates' eyes, because they never liked me. you know, but in my teacher's eyes, they always looked at me as a leader. And guess who was the tutor? Whenever those kids that hated me was having trouble with a subject, they had no choice but to come, you know. So in many ways, I was like, yeah, karma gets you good in the end. But, you know, I look at that time and I think, you know, it was a time where, you know, every moment of pain was like a drop of water. And it just kept on filling up and filling up and filling me, you know, filling inside me until finally now, as an adult, I can take that and I can pour all of that pain out and try to help all of the students and all of the youth and even adults, because genuinely, it's not the kids that have the problem. I don't blame the kids for acting the way that they do. Kids follow an example. You know, they have to see it from somebody. From somebody older, somebody they look up to, their parents, a family. It doesn't have to be their parents. It could be a cousin. It could be an uncle, somebody that has something against. You know, if you have an uncle that you love to go fishing with, and this uncle is anti-gay, naturally you love that uncle as a child, I mean, and you're going to follow his lead, you know. So if anything, I try to educate more the older people, and I always tell them, set an example. You know, even if it's a teenager that's 16 and he has a little brother at home that's 10, for that, you know, you are older. Set an example. I'm very strict with that. I'm very old school, you know. And nowadays, I think it's also a lot easier for children to be cruel because of the fact that they can be cruel without having to face somebody face to face. They can be cruel via text. They can be cruel via email. That's a coward's way to insult somebody, you know, because the other person can't defend themselves. And
you know, there's so much going on with cyberbullying too, so that people's reputations and lives, Sarah, can be destroyed by that. When you were first, I know you've done modeling, and how were you first chosen, or was this something that you had your mind set on in terms of being in TV and being in film? Did it just sort of happen, or what were the steps for you?
Well, what happened originally was I had graduated college, but I had also gone to Barbizon Acting and Modeling School. And the modeling school placed you for auditions, you know, to meet with their clients and so on and start doing runway shows and all. So if I had to tell you honestly, yes, my very, very, very first position or where I thought I was gearing towards was in modeling because of my height. But in many ways, my heart was never there. My heart was always with television and cinema and films. I didn't even really like theater as much. I always knew that I wanted to do films. But, you know, they were encouraging me and telling me, you know, of course, they were encouraging me in a classroom. Being in a classroom and being on a runway are two very different things, you know.
Right.
And, of course, they just figured that I was going to, you know, listen to and I had an amazing instructor. I mean, had it not been for her, I don't know how I would have. She gave me the major tools that I needed. You know, her name is Rebecca Bratland. And she, I do have to say, had the most compassion and the most patience. God bless her for her patience, because I cried during those makeup classes. I was not well. No, I didn't understand. What is foundation? Oh, my God. Why do I need this rouge? Why are you doing this to me? I was in rare form, you know. But, no, she was a darling, and she actually gave me the courage to speak my voice and say what it was that I wanted. And, you know, the only way I can describe the modeling world for me back then, because obviously there was no such, you couldn't be an androgynous model. You couldn't be a female, you know, walking down with male clothing. That was just, you know, you were female, you had to wear women's suits. You were female, you had to put on a dress. That's just the way that it was. Nowadays, people could write 5 books about that. But back then, it was simple. One side or the other, pick one. And there was no in between, especially in runway modeling or fashion, you know.
Right.
You know, so I kind of felt at the time like Linda Blair in The Exorcist, you know, when they were filming that and her voice was dubbed over by a 27, but she still had to read the entire script. And she said it was actually a mutual thing. The things that I had to say, I didn't want to say them, and the director didn't want to hear them because there were these horrible things coming out of this, you know, 12-year-old mouth. So, you know, I was not fond of the modeling world. And to be perfectly honest, to them, I didn't fit in. I was a mutant, you know. I'm 6'2". At the time, I was a size 12. I was a plus size model for them. You know, nowadays, I think they pushed it up. I don't know if it's 14 or 16 is still considered non-plus size. They've upped it a
Right.
little bit, but you know, it's just ridiculous how all of these rules, regulations. I mean, you know, and things like because in modeling you have to get with the specifics. You know, they ask for your hip size, they ask for your bust, and all that stuff. I don't know that. All I know is a size medium athletic bra. I don't know anything about BC, the whole alphabet that they do with this stuff. I mean, like, what are you talking about? They're throwing all of these things at me on a questionnaire, and I would, you know, and when they would say, for example, dress size, I would write down men 34. You know, for my for pants, you know,
Right.
or if they would for a shirt size, I would put men's medium. You know, I don't because I would always wear men's clothing. You know, so it's just kind of comedic and tragic at the same time. So it was almost like a mutual thing. It's like I can't, no, it's not for me. Little did I know, only maybe say 10 years later. 10 years is really not that much time, you know, but it
Right.
obviously it means a lot in the industry. 10 years later. All of a sudden, it's like the door's opening for every single thing that I was criticized for, that they hated about me, that, oh my God, how can you wear this? All of a sudden, now you see them rolling in. Now, all the girls basically that wear unisex clothing, that wear the jeans, that wear the men's shoes, all of that's welcomed. I just, you know, I took it gracefully, and I'm in a completely different place right now because, again, I'm doing my passion, film and cinema. So I'm, you know.
Well, if you
congratulations
know,
to them.
right, and you know, it's what's great is that you're doing your passion. I always think that people need to figure out what that is because I think that that's where all the excitement and that's where the energy comes from, and that really is what helps make a difference not only in one's life but also in the other people around them and even beyond. So, in terms of being a gay woman, in terms of, you know, we've kind of looking a little bit, tracing history, what it was like to have to be quiet, to have to be silent about it, whatever, being able to be more open about it. What today is still needed for gay women to feel more accepted, more free about who they are in their relationships,
I think
including having children?
well, I, you know, in many ways that too is an issue. But I also understand in many ways, I can see both sides. I can understand why many people are still, or back then they were not accepting. Because I remember once discussing with you, we were talking about relationships, and I had said to you that, you know, the foundation of any relationship, may it be romantic, may it be business or family, friendship, it's based on trust. You know, when you break somebody's trust, it's very difficult to regain, unless you're dealing with a very forgiving person. And you know, I am a very forgiving. I'll say a million times to err is human, and it is. You know, because nobody's perfect. But obviously, many years ago, none of this was accepted for men or women, the gay lifestyle. So in order to have your lifestyle, you had to go around sneaking around. You had to lie if you lived with somebody that was your roommate. Or if you were going away for the weekend, oh, you're going with a fishing buddy, or you're just going with a couple of girlfriends, you know, to a bachelorette party, and you were secretly going away with your lover, you know. And when people found out that people have been, quote unquote, living a lie for 10 years, oh, why didn't you tell me? You know, they felt betrayed. Yeah, but, you know, you're damned if you do, you're damned if you don't. You know, if you would have lost that friendship regardless. If you would have said to them, I'm gay, well, they would have written you off. And now they're writing you off because they found out. So, you know, it's very different. It's almost like you were forced to lie. And you know, there's no excuse for it, and there's no excuse on both parties. But I understand why, in many ways, people that just can't understand that lifestyle don't view gay people kindly because they still think it's all about sneaking around. And you know, it's like when people have an affair. You know, it's always sneaky and dirty, and it's not. Because people don't know about it. Once they know about it, they don't care anymore.
Well,
You know,
I
that's why
also
I always.
think, right. I also think that it's not just that there are, and I hope I'm not offending anybody here, but there also are religious fanatics who take that and decide that there's something really unseemly about being gay and about having relationships with someone from the same sex or a person who's transgender. And I don't know about their God, but my God is totally loving and accepting of all of us, no matter what we look like, who we, you know, what our preferences are in many different ways. And I just think that that is something that almost needs to be changed a little bit, because I think that interferes and it blinds people to looking at something in an incomplete way. We're whole, we've been made whole, and I think that what we're supposed to be doing here on this earth, besides growing ourselves, is also loving ourselves, as you teach and help, and also love one another. I think that it's really about figuring that out. We don't see that necessarily because of all the craziness and warring and whatever that's taking place in our world, but I really believe that that's what we're here to do.
But Dr. Joanne, if you would allow me to put you at ease, because I'm pretty sure you are so respectful, and you're very kind, and you're so warm-hearted, and I can clearly see that your heart just bursts of acceptance and love, and really, if we had actually one of you is enough, but if we had more of you, the world would be much more easier. But what I want to tell you, what I tell myself is, when you were saying the phrase, I don't need to offend anyone. I have learned, sadly, that even if you phrase everything with politically correct grammar, with the utmost respect, if you say things even in a more delicate manner, I promise you, somebody in this world will still find a way to be offended. So I always just say, speak your mind, say what, because
right.
I think if people didn't have different opinions, we wouldn't learn from one another. If everybody just basically, yes, would it be wonderful to live in a world where there was just screaming love and there would be no hate or no misunderstanding? Sure. Would it be nice for a child to go to a playground and not come home dirty? Sure. Is it possible? No.
And I agree with you there. I think that's really an important point. And thank you for saying such wonderful things about me. And I think that it is, it is important that we have differences of opinion. But do they have to lead to violence? Do they have to lead to hatred? Can't we just have a discussion about it and agree to disagree rather than, okay, I'm taking up arms, or I'm going to kill you because you're of a sex and you're doing something that I abhor? I mean, that's a totally different act, and that's an act to me of violence and terrorism, and not disagreeing.
Oh yes, I mean, but then again, I don't know if you've ever seen the show Bridezillas. These are the brides that literally will get cat fights with their bridesmaids because they can't.
That's one of the reasons I won't watch it.
People basically, what I'm getting at is people will argue over the stupidest things, and they will find it. What I'm saying is it doesn't have to be something that a major topic in this world. It can be over something dumb. Major fights escalate over something small, in regards of women. Gay or straight, I'm nobody to be sexist, but I think the majority of women would agree with me. In relationships, I just always believe that women always have to be better. Let's say, for example, in a straight relationship, and there's some trouble going on at home, a social worker comes home, and she checks on the family, and the mother's cooking dinner, and the kids are doing their homework, and the husband is drunk in a coma on the sofa. She'll probably, chances are, look at her clipboard and check, okay, everything's fine, But if she comes back the next day into that same household and, the father's burning dinner, the kids are raising hell at home, and the mother's drunk on the couch, there's a problem,
And that's and that's probably because of the roles that we're supposed to be assuming. We're supposed to be the caregivers. We're supposed to be the ones that keep the household in order and the ones that really kind of have our heads on straight and whatever. And so I think that's important.
Another analogy that I've given with people is like, even though people are saying, oh, they're so very PC and accepting, everybody's the same, the proof in lies when the tragedies happen. I remember this was said long ago, this topic came up, and they said, God forbid there's a car accident, and the family is in the car, the children and the mother survived, everybody's at ease, well, the kids will be okay. But if they announce that the father survived and the mom passed away, like this horrible chill goes through, and immediately they start thinking, who's going to raise those kids, If the mother, even if it's years after the funeral, she found a boyfriend and started dating him to marry, she's considered a whore. But the man if he finds a woman the day after or even at the funeral to raise his kids, it's okay because the kids need somebody. So, yeah, people
can
say what they want to say, you know, but women are expected to act in a different way. They just are. We're supposed to be better, is my point.
What you're saying is, and I believe this, is that that women and men have different standards. And
yes, they do. Yes,
right.
You know,
now
as
you
much,
said
as
something.
Much as people...
Go ahead. Finish your thought.
No, just as much as we would like to admit that we are a world of acceptance and that everybody is the same. Yes, probably in regards of that, you know, women can be police officers. Women can have can be in the military. They can't have those rough and tough jobs, you know, that basically back in the 40s or in the 50s was completely uncalled for. I do think that the mentality of, you know, oh, she's a woman, she'll handle it. You know, she's a nurturer, she can fix things. That still is in the mind of every child, every grown up. Some things don't change. It's timeless. You know, men are looked at as the troublemakers, you know.
You said something to me, I guess, in our correspondence, and I just wanted to share that and maybe have you comment on it. You said, our errors don't define us, but how we forgive does. And
yes.
I think that's so important for men, women, whomever. You know, I think that is something very important that we need to embrace. So do you want to expound upon that a little bit? And then I want to get back into the changing tides of being gay and transgender.
It's human. I think that, you know, they should really fix the Oxford Dictionary. And under mistakes, they should just put a picture of a human being. You know what I mean? Because we are the number one. We know how to err better than anything. You know, it's in our nature to make mistakes. I sometimes say, you know, people when they want to get philosophical, they say, well, your subconscious knows what you should do, but still you choose to do that. A mistake is a mistake. And you can't really, when a person makes it, you can't really dissect it because what they're going through having made that mistake is punishment enough. You know, people's errors don't define them because, you know, just because of the fact that somebody did one thing and another person did the other, that doesn't make the person worse, you know, in comparison. It just means that they chose to make this mistake. Now, bottom line is, who are we to judge? You know, because, you know, we're not perfect. I could be better in so many ways. You know, I, for example, I'm pretty sure that a lot of people would schedule my hanging for saying, you know, women are expected to be better. Or women are supposed to be doing this. And we live in a world where everything is supposed to be, you know, not defined for men or women. We're just people. Yes, but it kind of reminds me of an episode of Three's Company when, you know, Jack Tripper, he was in the hospital because he had gotten a tattoo on his butt. And he was very embarrassed about that because it was from a drunken stupor. So he was in the hospital wanting plastic surgery to have it removed, you know. And in the room enter doctors, both men and women. But back then, of course, the women doctors were. They looked very different. And, you know, the nurses, they had the original, you know, nurse's outfit. It wasn't like now they have the unisex scrubs, you know. And he was very embarrassed. He said, you know, because the doctors wanted to see where the tattoo was, and he was very embarrassed. He says, could you please ask the ladies to exit the room? And you know, the doctor looks at him and he says, oh, Mr. Tripper, you have to understand, there are no men or women here. We're all just doctors. And then he said, well, could you please ask the doctors in the dresses to leave the room? You know, we all have this thing. We just, I mean, as much
right.
as accept, and that doesn't mean that you don't accept. That's just, it's human nature to be bashful. It's human nature to feel a little bit embarrassed. You know, it's, you know, I just, I mean, I find it to this day hilarious that men are gynecologists. I mean, what can they, God, I could go into the whole
All right, so let's move from there. But I have a comment. I remember when I was an executive director and I was the first few in this large facility, and I was the first female executive director of this whole program for children and youth. And I felt like I had to come in almost kind of mirroring a male. So I would wear suits, and they were pantsuits, and my hair was very different. And I look back at that time because I just felt like I had to be what I wasn't because I was I had to fit into a man's world. And today, luckily, I think women are kind of helping to heal that in a lot of ways, and there's more acceptance. In terms of, so I want to shift gears because we do have an actress in our midst, and we want to highlight that a little bit here, right?
Yeah. Oh, so you don't want to run the concrete company. That
so yeah, with all the films and all the TV shows that you've done, what has been most rewarding for you as a person and as an actress?
Orange is the New Black. I say that I say that in a heartbeat. Many reasons, but two of the main reasons is because one, I saw this show grow. I saw it born. You know, and secondly, I think it's because of the fact that I have never had a role that literally didn't even, it was almost effortless. And when I say effortless, it's because I genuinely loved being in character. It wasn't, and when I say effortless, it's because I didn't have to say, oh God, I have to be in uniform again tomorrow or something. It was more of, I can't wait to be back on set tomorrow. You know, when they would yell martini shot, which is the last shot of the day, you know, before we wrap, you know, that was probably the worst thing that I could hear. Because I said, oh no, we're not going to keep going. You know, it was just, it was something that defined me. And I've never been to jail. I've never been arrested. I wish I had a more interesting story to say, you know, but
well,
I don't know
why.
Well,
I'm glad you don't.
But, you know, because don't get me wrong. I have, if anything, you know, I've met through the Women's Prison Association, I've met genuine women that have shared their stories with me, the ones that have been, you know, formerly incarcerated. And they speak sometimes, they're almost bashful. They're so shy to tell their stories and everything. And, you know, I don't even think about that when I talk to them. Whatever your past is, it is. You can't change that. You know, again, that's why our errors don't define us. It's how we forgive. And in order to be forgiven, we have to give some of that back. So I, you know, if a person has no forgiveness in their hearts, what makes you human? That's my question.
Right. You know? And you know, what? I think it's also so important, Farah, that we learn how to forgive ourselves. Because I think, mm-hmm. I think that we can hold grudges against our past, against what we've done, rather than just say, you know, that I didn't know better or whatever, and learn from that experience rather than holding ourselves so culpable for so long and not being able to let go. So I think forgiveness needs to be for other people as well as for ourselves. When you're playing in Orange is the New Black, tell us a little bit about your character.
Well, my character,
you and I have spoken about it, but...
Yeah. My character, ironically, I have to say, first, it just, I was privileged that they chose me, because again, I'm pretty sure there are many tall girls out there, with short hair. I just think that it's almost like, for example, me in the uniform, I think, you know how they say that if somebody's wearing something uncomfortable, you can tell, but if somebody's wearing something comfortable, they're completely at ease and they're just acting normal.
Right.
To me, when I had the thing on, I wasn't even thinking of it as a uniform, you know, I would just put it on and I just broke into character. And it's funny because I am everything, you know, if you see me mean mugging people, or if you get, I have that vicious look on my face, it's pretty much everything that I'm not. I laugh, you know, when people will categorize me as intimidating or something like that, I smile. I say, really? That's a good thing in many ways, but I'm scared of the dark. You know, that's just basically a front. It's, in many ways, it's like I brought out the character, that sadness, that the suffering, the anguish of the years from years ago. It's like that came out in me, in my face. And my thing is, you know, originally, from day one, I was cast, obviously, as a core background extra. But we're all like the Rockettes. We are dressed up in the same outfit. There's absolutely nothing, and regarding the clothing, there's nothing that will make us outstanding from the other. So how do you create a character? It has to be, at least to me, through facial expressions. That makes you different, you know? I would always talk to some of the girls because they would, you know, they would be wondering, you know, what it's like to be an inmate. I said, well, I really can't give you that information because I've never really been an inmate, but I've seen documentaries of lockup. I've seen documentaries of real prison footage. And if you really look at the prisoners, they're not smiling. They, if anything, they have a very sad, very gloomy, psychotic look even. You know, so I guess especially when we do scenes in the mess hall or we do scenes in the hallway and I'm just walking there with my head down or I'm giving a psychotic look to someone. It takes me back to my high school years, you know, because I just didn't smile. I did not smile. There was no reason for me to. You know?
Right, you weren't happy, and you weren't cared about, and so it made you feel like kind of invisible.
Depressed,
right?
Yeah, exactly. And here, you know, and that's why I was very flattered because of the fact that they gave me, they allowed me to be on screen. They gave me my place. They, the respect and the love from the entire cast and crew, from our producers all the way down to our PAs. I mean. You know, I don't really like using the phrase family because family is, I have come to the conclusion, it doesn't have to be blood related. Family are people that you choose to be in your lives. But they did act like that. In other words, we were more than just, you know, coworkers. They treated me in a manner where, you know, we were all stars. And I think that's why the show became such a huge success because we made it like that. There was never any animosity. There was never any... it was a vision, you know, it was nothing. Now it's Orange is the New Black. You know, now it's something that, you know, people will stop and say, ooh, wow. But back then it was, you know, it was
right,
untitled.
Isn't it wonderful though, that people could come together like that and grow a show and grow together and make it into something wonderful and beautiful, even though it's a difficult subject. I think that's great. We have about 5 minutes, so I'm just putting you on that. Go ahead.
Yes. The other show that put me at ease completely, and you'll laugh probably knowing because of the fact that the shows that have put me at ease are the corrupt ones. Like I was an AA member in Nurse Jackie. You know, again, that was just when I say I can't say effortless because you always give your best when you are on screen. But what I mean is that I felt completely at ease. Portraying, you know, an AA meeting goer, because again, you're in an environment that's very depressing. You're very sad. You're very, you know. So, and I was, I had the privilege of working as their core AA meeting goer, seasons 5 and 6 on Nurse Jackie. I mean, again, the entire cast and crew—they had just met me. They had seen me on different sets before, but it was the first time that I had the privilege of working with Edie Falco, and darling of a woman. Everybody there was just so wonderful. I really have no words. And, you know, it's funny because we film at the same studio. So at the time, sometimes, you know, during lunchtime, you would see everybody coming downstairs in scrubs and then us inmates, you know, in our prison gear. It was just one big family, you know. So, yeah, never a dull moment over at Kaufman, never.
Sarah, what's next for you? I mean, you have been known as the face of LGBT cinema. What's next for you? After these two films come out?
First I'd like to see the reaction. I will, especially I
okay.
want to see everybody's reaction on that one, you know, because you will see some very, I will say, I mean, if anything to make people laugh, if I know I made anybody laugh or if they genuinely enjoyed it, then job well done, you know, because that's what you know, any actor wishes to hear. That's what I want to hear, you know, that they enjoy
it.
And right now, working on several projects, so genuinely you will have to keep an eye out for me. But what I am doing at the moment, I am continuing with my anti-bullying campaign of Free to Love, freetolove.org. So if anybody is interested in looking into that, they can find it online. It's basically a nonprofit organization that helps the LGBT youth and sends a message promoting love and acceptance, you know. Also, at the moment, filming Orange is the New Black Season 4. So there are many, many things behind the scenes that are going on. You know, and I basically take the roles as they come. So whenever, again, somebody is in search for, you know, a head honcho lesbian or somebody that's intimidating, I laugh whenever they call me because I'm saying, you know, in many ways, the description, except for the last part, is not me. But if you call me, that's fine. You know, I'm fine with it because... I really don't think that I'm that. I don't really think that I'm that dominant. If anything, you know, I'm very much a softy. I'm a hopeless romantic. So, you know, I'm sorry about my.
And you know, when one meets you, because I've had that pleasure, when one meets you personally, that warmth, that specialness really shines through. So I don't see you as this hardcore. Which I mean, and so I'm going to have to watch some of these to get a sense of that, because I've never, you know, that's just not the way I picture you. Sarah, tell us again about how people can get in touch with what you're doing with bullying, because I think that's important, and how to find out more about you. And go ahead.
Basically, I'm on Twitter, I am on Instagram, and on Facebook. And if anybody wants to look more into the Free to Love website, it is spelled free, the word free, two as in the number two, and love, LUV.org. Basically, we have there are also other celebrities that are a part of this nonprofit organization. And, you know, people don't have to join to help. People sometimes, you know, when they wish they could be part of something, they don't know what to do in order to reach out to people. And I say, well, you know something, in order to reach and touch the world, you have to start with one person. So why don't you try with a friend of yours? Why don't you try talking to a stranger? Why don't you talking to a neighbor? To make a difference, you have to start. The problem with people is that they want to see the result immediately when they start. You know, you have to start from somewhere, you know.
And it takes time, right.
And it takes time. And another thing, you know, I'll leave you with this thought. Basically, there's one poem that I live by every day by Mother Teresa. It's called Do It Anyway. And one of her phrases in that poem is, the good you do today will often be forgotten. Do good anyway. She goes through, if you can Google this poem, again, it's called Do It Anyway by Mother Teresa, and she goes through all of the things that people do, from kindness to building to creating, and how people can destroy that, how people can accuse you of false motives. And she keeps on saying, do this anyway. And in the end, her message is, you see, in the final analysis, it was always between you and God. It was never between
right.
me
I love
and
it.
Anyway. You
right.
know, and the message basically is, if you're going to do good, do it because it's in you, not because you expect something in return, because that's a business transaction. Your
you know
heart
what?
Is full
that,
of love
that,
because that's who you are.
Right, and I love that, because I think that really speaks to who you are, Sarah Krennic, and thank you so much for agreeing to be on the show and for our connection, and certainly more to come. You've been a pleasure.
One more to come, Dr. Joanne. Believe me, we still have to get back into that three-company episode. Thank you so much for having me.
My pleasure. Thank you so much, Farah. Bye-bye.
Talk to you soon. Bye.
Next week, we're shifting gears, and we're going to have Mark Allen, who is the publisher of the New World Library, and he's also an author, and he is going to talk about his new book about Tantra, and how it's a practical and multifaceted wisdom and tradition that can improve every aspect of your life. So stay tuned, because it's not necessarily what you think. Thanks so much for joining us. Farah says everything so beautifully when she's talking about how you really need to forgive and you really need to do it anyway in terms of doing good. And it is your relationship, one, I would say, with yourself, and also your relationship with your higher power. Thanks so much for sharing your day with us. And also remember that you have the power, the ability to power your life, and to do so by choosing wonderful, loving thoughts and actions that really make a difference. Thanks again. If you want to find out more about me, go to docwhite.org. That's docwhite.org. And in a couple of weeks, we are launching the Power Your Life Network of visionaries, speakers, broadcasters, and more. Thanks for joining me.
You've been listening to the Power Your Life radio show with host and author, Dr. Joanne White. Listen often and spread the word about the upbeat show to enrich you and grow your life in the direction you desire. Listen again and again, and visit docwhite.org for more information and find out how Dr. Joanne can benefit you. Thank you for sharing your day with us, and stay tuned for more exciting guests and events to come.